when I got released. There was a knock at my door saying, is it true you wanted to join? I said, yes I do. They said, think it over, cause once you do you don't leave. I said, no, I believe. This is a cause worth fighting for. It's a cause worth living and a cause worth dying.
Hello,
for.
Hello comrades, and welcome back to a brand new season of Spectre Podcast. We'll be kicking off the first episode of the year discussing the RAF, the Red Army Faction. The Red Army Faction, formed in 1970, was a West German-based far-left militant group which remained active until 1998 before being formally dissolved. The RAF can be initially categorised as a communist and anti-imperialist urban guerrilla group engaged in armed resistance against the West German state. Early leadership of the RAF included Ulrike Meinhof, Gudrun Inslin, and Horst Mahler. The West German government proscribed the RAF as a terrorist organisation. Its activities reached a peak in the late 1970s, which led to a national crisis which became known as the, quote, German Autumn. During the course of its existence, the RAF engaged in a series of bombing campaigns, assassinations, kidnappings, bank robberies and shootouts with the West German security forces all over the course of 3 decades. Some of the RAF's most notable missions are still remembered to this day, such as the successful capturing and termination of Hans Martin Schleyer. Hans was a prominent German capitalist within the West German state and played the leading role across various business organisations in union busting and shutting down labour disputes. He made frequent and aggressive television appearances expressing his conservative anti-communist views, and was platformed even further in the West German political game through his membership in the Christian Democratic Union. But it's not only his modern exploitation of the West German people which granted him his notoriety. His past as an enthusiastic member of the Nazi student movement set a clear target in his back. During the Nazi era in Great Patriotic War, Schleyer served as an SS officer and achieved the rank of SS Unstensturmführer. The fact that someone like Hans was able to find himself dominantly within the state apparatus of West Germany can come as no surprise. The West German state had regularly turned a blind eye to many Nazi war criminals and the leadership of the Nazi Party. This saw Nazi members integrated into society and put into positions such as school teachers and university lecturers, police officers, judges and government officials, just to name a few. America and other allied nations of the Second World War also adopted the Nazi menace with no repercussion. Operation Paperclip, the secret US intelligence program, saw over 1,600 German scientists, engineers and technicians brought to the US after World War II. The program's goal was to gain an advantage over the Soviet Union during the Cold War by using these specialists to work on projects such as guided missiles, jet and rocket engines, aerospace, medicine and submarine technology. But back to the successful kidnapping and execution of Schleyer. The plan to capture Hans was originally formed by leading RAF member Siegfried Haag, but when he was arrested in 1976, his replacement, Brigitte Monhalt, carried out the mission. The operation took place on the 5th of September 1977. The RAF commando unit attacked the chauffeured car carrying the Nazi SS officer. The vehicle had just turned right from Friedrichsmittstrasse into Winzstadtstrasse when Schleyer's driver was forced to brake when a pram suddenly appeared on the road, a fake pram pushed out by RAF commandos. The police escort vehicle behind them was unable to stop in time and crashed into Hans' vehicle. Masked RAF members then opened fire with machine guns and pistols into the two vehicles, eliminating the driver and a police officer who was seated in the rear of the vehicle. The driver of the police escort vehicle and third police officer were also eliminated. Schleyer was then removed from the car and placed in the RAF's own getaway vehicle. Hans was hidden in a high-rise near Cologne. The RAF laid out their demands to the West German state, in which they wanted the safe release of captured RAF members. Their demands were declined during the negotiations with the West German security services, who only wished to delay proceedings in order to locate Hans. Recognising that the RAF would not compromise on their demands, the West German state ordered the execution of the captured RAF members who were found dead in their jail cells the next morning. The West German state attempted to construct a reality that the RAF members had chosen to commit suicide. Andreas Bader and Jan Karl Raspe were found shot dead in their cells, with one of them having been shot in the back of the head. Gudrun Inslin was found hanging in her cell. And finally, Irmgard Müller, who was portrayed to have stabbed herself 4 times in the chest. She recovered from her wounds and has since stated that the deaths of her RAF comrades were not suicides, but assassinations undertaken by the government of the time, a claim strongly denied by their government's former and present. Having failed to meet the demands of the RAF, Hans was executed and his body placed in the boot of a green Audi 100 located in France. His location was pinpointed to the authorities through a letter which was sent to French newspaper Liberation, which read, quote, "After 43 days, we have ended Hans Martin Schleyer's pitiful and corrupt existence. His death is meaningless to our pain and our rage. The struggle has only begun. Freedom through armed anti-imperialist struggle," end quote. Interestingly, throughout the holding of Schleyer by the RAF, they received support from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. The PFLP had hijacked Flight 181, a Boeing 737-230C jetliner, on the 13th of October 1977. The flight was en route from Palma de Mallorca to the West German state. The PFLP's mission aimed to secure the release previously mentioned by the RAF members, as well as Palestinians held in Turkey. The hijackers diverted the flight to several locations before landing in Somalia. The West German State Security Service, GSG-9, with ground support from Somali armed forces, stormed the aircraft and killed 3 PFLP members and capturing 1. Other campaigns and specialist missions carried out by the RAF included the bombings of US arms installations such as air bases, attacks on prisons where RAF members were held, bank robberies, the bombing of a US Army Corps headquarters, and, another notable mission, the successful assassination of West German State Prosecutor Siegfried Buback. Siegfried was another Nazi Party member and Nazi foot soldier. The RAF also targeted police officers and American servicemen stationed in the West German state. The formation of the Red Army faction can be traced through the 1968 student protest movement across the West German state. Anger was building up among the leftist youth and directed to the post-war denazification efforts made by the West German state, a process which the youth perceived as a failure or ineffective, as former Nazi members and servicemen held positions in government and the economy. The Communist Party of Germany had been outlawed since 1956. This blatant hypocrisy in the West German state led many to believe that it was in fact still a fascist state. Konrad Adenauer, the first Federal Republic Chancellor, who served in office from 1949 to 1963, had even appointed Nazi lawyer Hans Globig as director of the Federal Chancellery of West Germany, where he served from 1953 to 1963. Hans helped formulate the Enabling Act 1933, which effectively gave Adolf Hitler dictatorial powers, and he also played a vital role in the drafting of fascist laws and decrees such as the Blood Protection Act, the Reich Citizenship Law, one of the Nuremberg Laws introduced at the Nazi Party Congress in September 1935, which revoked the citizenship of German Jews, the Law for the Defence of the German Blood and Honour, and the Civil Status Act, as well as much more. The RAF itself was formed by 4 members: Andreas Bader, Ulrich Meinhof, Gudrun Esslin, and Horst Mahler. This founding 4 all come from different backgrounds and with varying tendencies. Whilst the Red Army faction could certainly be identified as a communist group, it certainly was not Marxist-Leninist. As the group aged and transformed, it proclaimed itself closer to Maoism and ultra-leftism. Lay members could easily be categorised as having strong anarchist or libertarian communist leanings or foundations, whilst the main body of leadership was more left, for lack of a better definition. This is perhaps why the RAF's activities, planning and preparation were carried out through single points of contact, and lay members only knew others by codename. Missions and operations, such as the capturing of Schleyer, were carried out by trained active units, often referred to as commandos. These commando units were usually named after deceased RAF members. However, names of commandos also got their inspirations from other deceased members of international militant groups, such as the Black Panthers, Irish National Liberation Army, and the Red Brigades. The shortcomings of the RAF would ultimately, alongside external political developments and the overthrow of the USSR, lead to its downfall. The RAF was always fighting in an ever-growing uphill battle against the steadily supplied West German state. Anti-terrorism legislation gave West German state security services greater powers in which to foil action, and this legislation made it equally as hard for communists to organise effectively within the state. With the main allies of the RAF laying east, the West was able to control the narrative and diminish and prevent public support for the group. The RAF's inability to effectively communicate with the West German state masses resulted in isolation. This failure wasn't just some mere oversight, but in fact was a result of the ideological chaos that had occurred well into the third generation of the group. So what is the legacy of the RAF? What happened to its members? And what can we as communists learn from their actions and experience in fighting against the West German state? Well, the RAF formally dissolved in 1998 with an 8-page letter which was faxed to Reuters news agency with the group's machine gun and Red Star. This is a following excerpt from the letter. Quote, "We think of all those who have died all over the world in the fight against domination and for liberation. The goals they fought for are the goals of today and tomorrow, until all conditions in which man is degraded, enslaved, abandoned, despicable being are overthrown. Their death is painful, but never in vain. They live on in the struggles and liberation of the future. We will never forget about the comrades of the Palestinian Liberation Front, who gave their lives in the autumn of 1977 in international solidarity while trying to free the political prisoners. Today, we want to remember, especially all those who decided to give their all in the armed struggle and who died in it. Our memory and our respect goes to those whose names we cannot mention because we do not know them. The revolution says, I was, I am, I will be." End quote. With this dissolvement, its members moved into various channels, some less appealing than others. Founding member Mahler has since now become a neo-Nazi and operates alongside various right-wing groups, both inside and out of Germany. He's been arrested and charged multiple times on the grounds of Holocaust denial and incitement of popular hatred. After failing to claim political asylum in Hungary, Mahler was deported to Germany and sent back to prison in 2017. He was then released in 2020. But not all members share the same fate as Mahler the scumbag. Member Christian Klar spent 26 years in prison and has since been released as of 2008. Liberals, fascists and other anti-communists were furious that he would be released, and even more angry at the fact that Klar was proud of his actions and never denounced the RAF. Bridget Hogefeld was released from prison in 2011 after being sentenced to life imprisonment in 1996. During her arrest operation in 1993 by the West German State Security Forces, her boyfriend and fellow RAF member, Wolfgang Grams, was murdered by police. The West German state attempted to claim that Grams committed suicide and fell onto the train tracks. Grams' parents challenged this conclusion in court, but it was upheld by five different courts, including the European Courts of Human Rights in 1999. The Interior Minister took responsibility for the poor conducting and post-processing of the operation and resigned in July of the same year, as well as the Chief Federal Prosecutor. Hogefeld was the last of the RAF members to be released. Monahopped also served a number of years in prison and was released in 2007. She played a vital role within the RAF, serving as a weapons procurement specialist and partaking in commando missions. In more recent history, RAF member Daniela Klett was recently tracked down and arrested after going underground in the 90s. Members who avoided capture by the state for so long into their old age were often referred to as the RAF pensioners. RAF member Ernst Volkerstaub remains on the run from West German authorities after previously serving 4 years in prison for being identified as a member of the RAF. Burkhard Garwig, who was late to join the third generation of the RAF, remains on the run from German authorities. Following the arrest of his fellow comrade, Garwig sent an 8-page letter from the underground in which he wrote about the RAF, the arrest of Klett, and political commentary in the 21st century. He addressed this letter to his family, to former acquaintances, and to his comrades. He defended the RAF as a revolutionary counter-violence against the structural violence of the system. He placed fellow RAF members such as Meinhof on par with heroes such as Guevara and Mandela. Many other members of the RAF were murdered in prison. Others who played background roles in logistics, smuggling, and other miscellaneous acts are now well underground. So what can be learned from the RAF and its members? Well, the RAF in its dissolvement letter recognised its failure not to build a political social organisation alongside their armed struggle. The building of the guerrilla resistance against the US-built West German state had to go hand in hand with the building of political structures that could grow from the grassroots processes. The lack of political organisation and agitation for well over 20 years resulted in a weak political process and a clear lapse in the ideological principles of Marxism-Leninism. This weakness saw clear struggles in the RAF to recruit into later generations of its existence, ultimately leading to the infiltration by West German state security services. The RAF would have always struggled on the political front in the West German state, with the banning of the Communist Party of Germany and the West German state submitting fully to the US and its allies. They were able to dominate the political narrative, popular culture, education, and were able to wash anti-communist propaganda through the masses with ease. The citizens of the GDR were demonised and all those aligned with ideas of communism were criminalised. This meant that the actions of the RAF would always be met with fury, as the backbone of agitation was not there to combat the West German state and its capitalist ruling class. The RAF, however, was able to forge meaningful alliances and practical solidarity with other armed groups, such as the PFLP, which, as already discussed, operated in conjunction with the RAF. Another strength which faded in its later generations, along with its ideological convictions of the RAF, was its coordination with the GDR. In the early years, the RAF was able to effectively work alongside the GDR in securing safe housing of RAF members, assisting in the transport and logistics of weapons and equipment, as well as providing intel on proposed RAF targets and much more. As stated, however, due to the ideological degradation of the RAF into its later generations, this relationship near faded or died. The RAF had drifted to ultra-leftism at the hands of its leadership, to which some attribute to the West German state security services infiltrating the group and eroding it from the inside. Another weakness we can learn from is the way in which the RAF built its actions and missions around. Whilst the targets themselves were legitimate and the cause of the RAF, US military bases, West German state police stations, US Army headquarters, officers' clubs, the German embassy, and much more, many of the actions were conducted on siege focus, mainly on the release of RAF members. The RAF should have known that the West German state, backed by the US and its allies, would never agree to the release, especially after previous attempts had failed. This meant that actions that should have been executed smoothly with a more effective and communicative goal were clogged with one specification which resulted in the death or capture of several RAF members instead. Poor operational security, combined with the previously mentioned degradation of relationships with the GDR and other socialist states, resulted in unnecessary confrontations with the West German security state services. The RAF were conducting target practices within a forest in Dortmund when they were confronted by police. A shootout ensued and one of the RAF members was wounded so badly that he later died from his injuries. Ultimately though, the fundamental flaw of the RAF, as mentioned, was its isolation from the masses and its step away from Marxism-Leninism. When we look at other groups such as the IRA and other republican movements that inspired the RAF, we can see how they attempted to embed themselves within the masses and local communities, although under much different material conditions and with very different goals. The RAF found no strong community or key stronghold within the West German state as a result of Western dominance. The ideological shift saw isolation from the socialist states such as the USSR, China, Cuba, Vietnam and Laos. This completely stunned the RAF in political development and physical development. The RAF in its late stages became a subconscious tool of the ruling class of the West to which they played like a fiddle and were able to demonise socialism at their will. This is a clear showcasing of ultra-leftism and anarchism being nothing but damaging to the cause of socialism and indeed a tool of capitalism. Even with the forming of the DKP in 1968, the RAF did not engage with them and instead labelled them reformist. Truth be told, this episode could pick apart every letter or publication by the RAF and examine sharp hypocrisies which grew within the group's distancing from Marxism-Leninism to anarchism and ultra-leftism. That, however, would be hours long, but what we can gather and the main lesson to be learnt is that no amount of urban guerrilla action in the West German state on its own would have brought forward revolutionary change. The RAF remained aloof from the clear interaction with the masses. However, the RAF was not without its sympathies from those in the West German state. The ramping up of police action and their shoot-to-kill policy saw multiple civilians with no connection to the RAF murdered by the state. The RAF also saw various pockets of support from the general public, with reports finding that a number of students were found to have pictures of RAF commandos in their wallets. Opinion polls conducted at the time also showed a percentage of participants who would be willing to, quote, conceal a fugitive, end quote. These small percentages, however, were not enough for the RAF to become the dominant force. In order for real change to occur, the revolutionary must move through and with the masses as a fish moves through and with the water. Thanks again, comrades, for tuning in to the first episode of this year's season of Spectre Podcast. As always, be sure to follow us on Twitter and of course give us a like and review on whatever listening platform you're tuning in from. Be sure to share us with your friends, comrades and co-workers. The illegal overthrow of the USSR and the fall of socialism across Europe has served as one of humanity's greatest disasters. Unemployment, homelessness, food poverty, prostitution, war and various other plights now dominate Europe. Germany today has seen growing financial crises, all while its government, alongside the anti-Deutsch movement, provide endless checks to Israel and its genocide of the Palestinians, and to Ukraine and the inter-imperialist war against Russia. With this growing instability comes the rise of fascism. Again, a trend not just specific to Germany, but one right across Europe. So let's take the lessons learned from the RAF and its commandos to build ourselves even stronger. Let's learn from their strengths, their operations, their weaknesses, and build a path to the future. In the fight against fascism and imperialism, it's vital that we channel the spirit of Talman. Only our unity in the building of a popular front, a red front, can stamp out the woes of imperialism and the bile of fascism. Together, we can form more than just a Red Army faction. We can form a Red Army of the people. And the feeling coming from my bones.